On today's episode of the McCann Dogs Podcast,
it's really one of the quickest ways to ruin a relationship that is budding is to end up in that reactive mode where now the dog's confused and you're upset with them for that confusion.
And now, Instructor Shannon.
Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast. It is season four, and I am in the studio today with Instructor Swanee.
Hi, everyone.
And I am Instructor Shannon. For anybody who's joining us for the first time, welcome to the McCann Dogs Podcast. And of course, to all of you who have been here before, welcome back. It is always nice to sit down and record some chatter with Instructor Swanee, where we can just talk about different things that go on in the dog world and try to help everybody out and open up conversations about our dogs. And today's discussion is going to be, I think, a really good one. I want to talk about relationship and bonding. And we get a lot of students who are frustrated with their situations and, you know, maybe they didn't start training early and they've come in and the dog's, you know, somewhere around the adolescent mark and they're struggling to build any sort of relationship and bond with the dog. And the question that we get often from them, and often with, you know, a very teary expression because it pains them, is why doesn't my dog like me? And there are so many factors to this, and it's not that they don't like you, it's that there's not necessarily the value there in place. Yeah. And a lot of the times that comes from different places and different reasons. So I wanted to dive into some of those reasons today so that we can discuss and help people recognize where these things are potentially going wrong. It's not always an obvious thing. You know, sometimes it's the big obvious thing. You know, the person is too aggressive with the dog. The person is loud and yelling and booming and, you know, perhaps they're overwhelming to the dog. And that's a pretty obvious thing. You know, it would seem obvious that if somebody doesn't like you because they're constantly being, you know, that they're constantly feeling like they're being oppressed in your presence, then they wouldn't like being around you and would want to move further away. So sometimes it's a big thing. And then other times it's these little things that kind of accumulate, or these little things that we continue to do without realizing they're being detrimental to our relationship. So let's dive into this today. Do you have anything that springs to mind? I love asking you this, and I know I put you on the spot all the time, but do you have anything that springs to mind when you think of this problem? One of the problems that spring to mind?
Well, I think one of them is people give dogs human emotions. And liking or loving someone is a very human emotion.
It is.
And dogs don't work like we work. Like their brain thinks differently. Dogs value people who are providers and who give them access to valuable things.
Yes.
And dogs love people who are leaders and they can trust and they're predictable. So those are the things, those are the attributes that what we perceive as liking us is the dog is looking to us for, because we can fulfill those needs.
Yes. Brilliant. Brilliant. And if you're unsure about what leadership is all about, if you're among many people who get confused about what leadership for a dog actually looks like in this day and age, because there's so many differing opinions, we have many videos that will help you on our YouTube channel. We have podcasts on the podcast channel that are all about leadership and how you can make your leadership efforts better for your dog, and that will turn into the quote-unquote dog liking you or loving you. Like all of the relationship that we want to share with our dogs. And relationship can be such an obscure thing. It's more obvious with humans, of course, when you're in a human relationship, but when you're in a relationship with a different species, it can be very convoluted, very confusing how that relationship comes into play.
Right,
so I absolutely love what you were talking about.
Right. Yeah. Like being, you want to be, when I communicate with my dogs, I'm very clear and I'm very consistent. Yes. So my dog is easily able to understand me and predict me.
Yes.
So my dog says, I like hanging around Christine because I get her.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with your friends, like Shannon and I get each other very well. So we tend to,
we're like peas and carrots.
We're drawn to each other. Whereas other people you're not maybe as drawn to because you don't understand them. They're not clear. They're unpredictable.
Yeah.
So same with your dog. They want someone that they get.
Yeah, absolutely. And a good leader is somebody who makes the dog feel safe. Mm-hmm. Because dogs really instinctually, it's all about play, safety, you know, those fundamental things that a dog needs are the ability to just relax in life mm-hmm. and let you be the big heavy. You know, you're going to give them cues. If there's something they actually need to be worried about, you're going to take control of that. If there is nothing to worry about in the situation, we want our dogs to be able to look to us and read that from us mm-hmm. right away and know that because we've provided them with good leadership, they can trust and mm-hmm. take those vibes from us, and they know that they're in a good situation that is not going to be harmful for
right.
them.
Yes.
And that in and of itself mm-hmm. is one of the biggest things that dogs look to us for. So that trust and that safety element are huge mm-hmm. and you're bang on the money for bringing that one up first. Mm. Love that. All right, let's dive into some of the more nuanced ones. Or actually, let me throw it back to you again. Anything else that sort of springs to mind as a reason that your dog might, you know, and when we say, when we have these people that come in and they're looking to build a better relationship with their dogs, it's not necessarily about that big overarching concept. Right. Sometimes it's about other little things. So anything that springs to mind right
well,
off the bat.
Well, if the dog regards you more as a litter mate mm-hmm. than a provider, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to struggle with them.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get more nipping. You're going to get more of the dog going, I don't need to listen to you. I'm doing my own thing because you don't carry that leadership quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the relationship with a dog, and I already actually said this earlier, was dogs like fundamentally are looking for the value of play in life. So a lot of the times, as humans, we see people come into our obedience classes to learn about foundational obedience and to mm-hmm. learn how to create these well-behaved family members, and they're out of their element. Mm-hmm. So real learning happens outside of your comfort zone, and sometimes we need to step outside of our comfort zone, but of course, that feels uncomfortable at
right,
times.
Yes.
So a lot of the times we have to really joke with people and, you know, give them that little mm-hmm. gentle shove on the shoulder and say, hey, you know what, let your hair down a bit.
Right.
Play with this dog.
Yes.
I guarantee you, if you have some play and you have some good time with mm-hmm. this dog and you let your hair down a little bit, you are going to start to see better results.
Right. So, yes. Yeah. People are often boring in yeah, their dog training.
Exactly.
And the dog says, you're boring.
Yes.
And it's funny when you watch instructors in class, well, you can hear the instructors in class. So I'm teaching a class of, you know, 12 dogs and there's one instructor
yes.
and I hear their voice and I hear the fun in their voice.
Absolutely.
Over all 11 other people in that yes. room generally.
All 11 other people and 11 other dogs.
Yes. Yes.
So that's really the key. If we are entertaining and exciting to our dogs and we genuinely let them know that we're happy with what's mm-hmm. going on, they want to engage in that. They right. want to partake in that. So as hard as that can be for some of you, I know that with myself going into a new situation, the last thing I want to do is draw attention to myself. But when I'm training my dog, you know what? I've gotten to the point where I can say, I'm going to shut out mm-hmm. my concern about people judging me for acting silly. I'm going to make sure that this is a good time for me and my dog. So I've gotten, and practice makes perfect
right,
with
yeah.
everything. So I've gotten a lot better at being able to let my hair down in new situations mm-hmm. where I'm outside of my comfort zone maybe, and there's people around that I don't know
right.
that, you know, I want to make sure that aren't, you know, really, I've gotten to the point where I don't care about the judgment. It's about me and my dog in that mm-hmm. scenario. And if people in that room aren't necessarily at that point yet, they might look at me and go, oh, look at that goofball over there. Like, what does she
right,
think she's
yeah.
doing? Why is she hooting and hollering with her dog? I'm okay with that at this point.
Yes.
I hope that that person will get to the point where they think, oh, you know what? This hooting and hollering and having a good mm-hmm. time with my dog is really making a difference. And I don't care what people think about it either. So
right,
hopefully
yes.
they evolve to that point as
yes.
well.
I was helping in a in-person Puppy Essentials the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working on response to name when there's a distraction on the floor. We had toys on the floor and I was helping with one of our students. And when I took her puppy and the puppy turned to me, I was, woohoo,
yeah.
yay. And pretty much every puppy in the room stopped and wanted to come to me. It's like, I thought I could have had six puppies here
moments,
because the puppies went, oh my gosh, she looks like so much fun.
Yes.
I want to get to her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
They're attracted to fun.
Absolutely. Like if you watch a young dog who's growing up, they spend a lot of time trying to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's ripping up grass and doing puppy burns around the yard, or whether it's channeled play with you, mm-hmm. which is, of course, more ideal than ripping up grass. But mm-hmm. they're always looking for the fun in a situation.
Yes.
And they're always looking for the value in a situation. So if we can make ourselves valuable to our dogs, mm-hmm. and that comes in many forms. What are some of the other ways that we can make ourselves valuable to our dogs?
Well, by providing resources such as their food bowl, so not free feeding, by controlling the toys. Mm-hmm. We pick up toys when we're done finished playing and we put them away. By being calm, confident leaders.
Yeah.
You know, providing that feeling of safety for the dog.
Yeah, absolutely. And by using food well in training, we can also make ourselves extremely valuable mm-hmm. to the dogs. Food is this wonderful, it's almost like a magical resource that we have, because almost all dogs love food. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not always the case. There are dogs that are not very food motivated, that we have to use a lot of play and we have to use a lot of other tactics that that we can figure out what the dog likes, and we can become valuable through using those things that our dogs like. Using good timing, though, with food in training, and making sure that your dog gets properly rewarded for doing the things we mm-hmm. want them to do will help to build value in you. So what do I mean when I say properly rewarded and good timing?
Well, we want to make sure we're rewarding the dog for what we like. So if say our dog does something great, and we say, okay, I want to give him a treat for doing that. But by the time we reach for our treat, the dog has wandered off and is now sniffing a table leg, and we run over and give them the treat. The dog thinks, oh, I got a reward for sniffing the table leg.
Yum. I'll sniff that table leg all day. Right, it's valuable.
Right. They can't put it, they can't back chain to put it together where they got the reward. So we need to be quick. With dogs, you need to be quick. You need to be able to tell them what's wrong, tell them what's right very quickly in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we use food very specifically when we use food in training. And sometimes that means that we spend a very short period of time showing the dog with the food. So for example, if I'm teaching a young dog to sit, I am going to first use food to lure my dog into the sit. I'm actually not even going to use a cue until my dog is proficient at getting into the sit position with that food lure. So there's nothing that's going to come out of my mouth until my dog understands how to get into the sit. So if I'm still struggling to find that perfect spot to lure my dog into the sit, I'm not going to use a cue with that yet because I don't want my dog to think that cue is unimportant.
Right.
I want him to start to associate the cue with the behavior that I'm getting. So we always say, name it once they know it. If they're still not quite sure about what it is you're asking them to do, and the down might be a better analogy to use here, because usually the sit is pretty easy, but the down can be a little bit more finicky. So if you're using that lure and your dog is still struggling to figure out what you want, and they're not quite getting into the down, that's when you're not using a cue. But what we want to do once our dog understands the behavior. So once I can very easily lure from that sit or stand position into a down position, I want to start getting rid of the food and using it as a reward instead. So now what I'm going to do is leave the food in my pocket or my bait pouch. Mm-hmm. I might start adding a cue at this point, in which case it's going to precede the lure, or precede the signal, I should say, because it's no longer a lure. So I'm going to give my verbal cue down, pause for just a second, and then I'm going to show my dog with my hand. Now, once he gets into the down position, this is where the value comes in for him. I'm going to mark somehow. So we use the word yes. It's mm-hmm. a short, sharp marker that says you've done something right and a cookie is coming.
Right.
So it bridges that time gap you were talking about, and it helps the dog understand where mm-hmm. they've been right. So I'm going to say yes as soon as chest and elbows hit the floor. Then I'm going to reach for my food and pay off. So very quickly, my dog learns that working for me often pays off in reward, and they don't necessarily need to see the food as a lure to make those connections and do the behavior first. So that's where we become very valuable, because mm-hmm. now we're saying, you know what, you did a great job and I'm going to pay off for you. So using food and training, using toys mm-hmm. and training, basically it's about using what the dog likes.
Right.
So what does your dog like? And use that to your advantage mm-hmm. when you're training and you're helping to build value for yourself. Right.
And if you start when you first get the puppy, or if you adopt an adult dog, start at the beginning and like that, you've set the tone for the relationship.
Absolutely.
So right off the bat, you're teaching the dog that doing things for humans is valuable.
Yeah.
And you start to build what we might call a work ethic. So it's the dog's like, I like doing things for you. I know when I can take my dogs off leash at the park and none of them run off. They all, I unclip their leash and they immediately turn and they say, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like they want to do something. Absolutely. They're not interested in running around and sniffing or looking for another dog to play with. They want to do something with me.
Yes. Perfect. All righty. So the next thing on my list actually kind of ties into that very nicely. Mm-hmm. So you have not taken the time to train and communication is strained. So this is so important because a lot of the times puppies are cooperative. You know, these young dogs, they're in this safety zone where they follow us around and they don't want to step outside of this little safety bubble because they don't know what might be out there lurking for them.
And that's just genetics.
Absolutely.
Just like a fox cub wouldn't, instinct. You know, what, 2 weeks, yeah, just leave because they know they need to stay close to mom to be safe.
Precisely. Mm. And if they venture too far away, chances are they're not going to make it back, which right. is the way nature works. Mm-hmm. But now our dogs, of course, are safe in our homes in most cases, but instinct is strong.
Yes.
And it's still there. You mm-hmm. really, you can't get genetics gone from any sort of any entity. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we are keeping that in mind. And when our puppies lose that cooperative nature, that tends to be the time that the tables turn a little bit.
Yes.
So they grow up into the next development period. Depending on the dog, it can be anywhere from like 4 to 7 months, sometimes a little bit earlier even, yep, where they'll just lose that instinct for safety and they'll start to venture outside right. of things. And this is when people start to say, oh, the puppy's being stubborn. They knew it last week and now they don't know it anymore. And truly, if you have just looked at this cooperative puppy period as, oh, you know what? I got lucky. I got yep. a puppy that's mm-hmm. cooperative and I don't need to bother training. When that expires, now you have a puppy who doesn't know how to communicate right. with you, hasn't built value for you, etc. And then it becomes that strained communication
yes.
where they don't understand you. So now you're confusing mm. or potentially boring right. or whatever the case may
yeah,
be.
Or you're getting angry
yeah.
because it's, yeah, well, you know, for the last 2 or 3 weeks, every time I've gone pop, 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 you've come to
yeah.
me. Why aren't you doing it anymore?
Yes.
So they start to get angry and the pup goes, I'm losing trust in you because I have no idea what that means. And you're angry. I don't trust you anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So important to take some time to do the actual training so that you create real communication, not mm. just the, oh, I got lucky and I got a dog that understands
right.
because chances are that is going to fail
yes.
at some point.
And it's common. We will get phone calls. Oh, my puppy yes. already knows how to come. And I'm like, well, how old's your puppy? 12 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm like, No.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Talk and to I us know, in a month.
Yeah. They just, yeah, the person doesn't yeah. understand.
And
yes.
actually, I shouldn't say that. Talk to us in a month because that was a bit tongue in cheek. But mm-hmm. really, what you need to do is you need to capitalize on that cooperation
right.
and make your life easier down the road.
Yes.
Because during that cooperative time where they mm-hmm. are instinctually following you for safety, you can use that to your advantage and train all the things that you want to train. And then it's not going to be perfect because this is real life,
right.
not Disney. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be perfect. When they hit those development periods, you're still going to see things fall off, but mm-hmm. you'll have some established skills. You'll have some communication in place and it will be so much easier to get things back on track. And of course, when we can communicate well with one another, we genuinely tend to like spending time together.
Right.
So that communication is so, so important. And you touched on getting agitated with the puppy, which mm-hmm. is what happens a lot of the times.
Right, yeah.
Because as humans, we expect that it was in place there
right.
last time. We don't expect there to be this behavior change that happens outside of humans. We
right.
understand it with humans. You know, we joke all the time about mm-hmm. the terrible twos.
Yep.
And we joke all the time about teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my own niece right now is a teenager and it's so funny because now all of a sudden her friends are just the center of her universe mm-hmm. and the rest of us don't know anything about anything. And, you know,
yep.
that's okay because I remember being in that development period
mm-hmm.
and now I can appreciate my parents so
yes.
much more. Than
right.
I
yes. Yes.
Would. But yeah. When we get to the point where we start to get agitated with our dogs and we start to do what I call reactive training.
Right.
So talk about what reactive training looks like.
Well, reactive training is full of emotion mm-hmm. and dogs don't understand human emotion. When we're a reactive dog trainer, we wait till the dog makes the mistake and then we...
Yes.
Yeah, then we react.
Yeah.
So rather than being proactive and trying to help the dog learn and not do the bad behavior, we wait till we see the bad behavior and then we're too late.
Yeah.
We react and the dog says, I don't understand what that reaction from you. You're inconsistent. I don't like this. I'm out of here.
Yeah. You're a bit mean. You're a bit scary and you're not any fun. And the value starts dropping off.
Right.
And yeah, absolutely. It's really one of the quickest ways to ruin a relationship that is budding is to end up in that reactive mode where now the dog's confused and you're upset with them for that confusion. So as an example, with that 12-week-old puppy that already quote unquote knows how to come when called, you know, when we get to 16 or 17 weeks and the puppy suddenly seems to no longer want to come when due to the fact that it didn't really understand it to begin with. But now we're at this stage where as a human, we're expecting them to do it. The puppy is confused and not doing it. So then we get angry with them and we start yelling louder and we go up to them and we get agitated. And sometimes some people will even correct in that situation. And sometimes people will think that a quick fix solution is the only way to get there. And, you know, we've had people talk about, well, I'm just going to get tougher and I'm going to put on a prong collar and correct now. And it's just the absolute opposite of what you need to do.
Right. The puppy never understood it in the first place because you didn't train. Back to that Bob Bailey saying, training often fails because we expect too much of the dog and too little of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the point where if you've gotten to this point and you're struggling with your relationship and your puppy is not doing the things that they were doing, you really need to take a good hard look at what you've taught them. And it shouldn't just be, oh, but he's just gotten it right all this time, because that's just luck on your part.
Right. Yes.
You know, if you take the time to do the repetition and help them have a clear understanding, they will have those struggles through development, but they'll rise to the occasion and you'll have things to fall back on to help them rise to the occasion. And the development periods are so much easier to weather when you've got skills in place and when you've got communication in place. You know, it might be a little blip on your radar versus months of really hard work if that development period is taking you down the wrong path and you're starting to be reactive in your training. It's actually going to make things so much harder for you in the long run. So be fair to the dog. Consider what you've done and what you know the dog understands, and truly consider what they understand, not just what you assume they understand.
Yes, because people will, you know, I told them quiet and it didn't work.
Yes, exactly.
Did you teach them what quiet means?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. If you're using situations that, if you're using words like stubborn, then chances are you are barking up the wrong tree. Pun intended. And your dog probably doesn't really understand, and they probably need actual training to help them understand. And it really is a game changer. It's such a life-changing thing to be able to communicate with this creature that lives in your house and to be able to give them instruction and to take instruction from them in some cases. And we'll talk about that a little bit later down the
road. I will never blame my dog. If something goes wrong, I go, what did I do wrong? And I'll sit back and I'll think and I'll try to think of it from the dog's point of mind. I put myself in the dog's shoe. And like it's not... It's my fault.
Did you say shoe singular?
I did say shoe singular, in my dog's big shoe.
One big shoe.
But yeah, like it's not the dog, it's me. I'm doing something wrong. Yeah. That's why my dog's messing up. My dog's a clean slate. They're an animal. They're it's me who's the poor teacher.
Yeah, and the reason that things go wrong could be so many reasons. It could be that you've assumed knowledge that's not there. It could be that they were overfaced by distraction. There's so many things
You're treating them like a human.
That too. Yes. That's a big one. And that's one that we're all so prone to. So don't feel bad if you've fallen into that sort of, you know, little little divot there. But think about it as much as possible from the dog's perspective. They are not little humans. They are very different from us. And to be fair to them, we need to make sure that we do appreciate their own way of thinking and their instincts and how all of that plays in. So if you need help with this, we are on our podcast has tons of information about all of these things. Our YouTube channel, there are so many places that you can go that you can get help from us at McCann Dogs to really understand your own dog. So that adversarial relationship with reactive training is a bad road to go down. And it doesn't end unless you change your attitude. So unless you change your way of thinking, if you continue to have that reactive behavior with your dog because you're not changing your behavior, it's just going to drive a bigger wedge.
Right.
And you're either going to have a dog that's worried about you and doesn't want to be around you, or you're going to have a dog that goes, you know, if they're a bit of a sasspot dog, you might have a dog that plays catch me if you can all right. the time, or looks mm-hmm. for opportunities for mischief, yes. et cetera, because they're looking for their fun in their life and they're not sure how to do it productively.
Right. Yes. I read a saying once, and it was violence begins where knowledge ends.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not at saying that people are being violent, but you know, it's, you know, we sort of, when we don't know what to do, we get angry yes. and we don't know what to do. So we just need to take a breath, cool down
yeah.
and think about it from the dog's point of view.
Absolutely. There are, I say the two major things in my life that I need to tap into patience for. One is driving. Mm-hmm. I'm a very patient driver, but I get very anxious when people are tailgating. Mm-hmm. So I start to get heightened and I have to like bring myself down and tap into all of my tactics for patience. And the other one is, guess what? Dog training. Because, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. you're in different spaces than your dog, and sometimes they have different wants than you. And
right.
the last thing you want to do is lose your cool. And right. that's not to say that there's not a place for good, solid information. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes corrections are warranted. But if you are correcting your dog, they deserve to feel that without the emotion.
Yes.
And that is so important. That's mm-hmm. where patience comes in so handy. And
yes.
correction should never be violent. They should never be angry. They should give good, clean, clear information. Mm-hmm. They should be the lightest amount of correction that you possibly need for your dog. And you should make sure that after that correction, you then help the dog be successful
yes.
as well.
Yes.
And ideally, you've tried to help the dog be successful before that correction also. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes weird things come up and we don't necessarily mm-hmm. expect it. So we haven't right. trained for
yeah.
it. So.
And that leads to another thing too. Dogs don't understand grudges mm-hmm. and they don't hold grudges themselves.
It's so, one of my favorite things about them.
Yeah. So if we are like, well, I'm mad at you, so I'm not going to pat you right now, the dog doesn't understand that. No. You're just being confusing and unreliable.
Yeah.
So always accept don't hold a grudge. That's one of the things that will make your dog go, I'm staying away from them. Accept them. You know what? You were bad 2 seconds ago, but you know what? I still love you. Yeah. And
now you're good again.
Yeah, look at you being good. Yes. So don't ever, like, I don't like that when I see somebody angry at their dog and holding a grudge.
I agree.
That's an awful thing. Yeah. And it's awful to hold grudges just in general.
It is not productive
no.
at all. Alrighty. So there's a lot of things on that end of the scale that we can talk about that will be more obvious to put the dogs off. But some of the things that also put the dogs off are things like us giving too much affection, being
yes.
too lovey-dovey with our dogs,
right.
being in their face all the time, trying to hug them all the time. You know, we joke around a lot about forced snuggles with our puppies, and I do forced snuggles with my puppies. Mm-hmm. I make sure that they spend time when they're young babies
right.
hanging out in my lap. I usually will have some sort of a chew for them. It's a double fold. So mm-hmm. basically, I'm looking for them to understand that I bring good things, mm-hmm. that they don't have to worry if they're chewing something valuable and I'm around. I want them to be comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually start that process with my very young puppies, you know, 8 to 10 weeks of age.
Right.
I'll have something like a bully stick mm-hmm. or something high value that I'll hold on to, and I'll have them on my lap. And as we're doing our forced snuggles,
uh-huh.
they get to chew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it accomplishes a couple of things, because I want to snuggle with my puppies, but I also don't want to, you know, take away other opportunities. I don't want to spend all my time forcing them to snuggle. So it gets me a little snuggle time, and it also helps to prevent any sort of possession.
Mm-hmm.
What is your sort of snuggle affection routine with your dogs?
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm not a snuggly person with
my
dogs.
I'm going to stop you right there, because don't hate to say it. Don't feel bad.
I am not.
We're all different.
Yeah.
We're all different.
I'm not a snuggly person with my dogs. I like to pat them and do things with them, but I don't like to snuggle with them.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
there's
So I don't tend to.
Yeah.
Now, my little dogs have always been picked up a lot. So mm-hmm. that's kind of like a little snuggle yeah. as I'm picking them up and taking them, moving them somewhere. But my big dogs, I haven't really snuggled with.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Like, they have their bed on the floor and that's where they sleep.
Yeah.
And
And they probably appreciate that too, because lots of dogs don't like to snuggle.
Right.
Some dogs love it. Mm-hmm. There's no question there. Some dogs will love a good snuggle, right, and some dogs don't. And I tend to, past the forced snuggles with a puppy, which are really more about, you know, just controlling, right, the puppy, yes, and not letting them be loose, mm-hmm, and, you know, until they have some basic understanding of the rules of the house, I'm either working with them, mm-hmm, or we're hanging out and I'm actually keeping care and control. So with a puppy that's under 10 weeks of age, they don't get free time where they just wander around the room and investigate, mm-hmm, things, because I don't want to end up in that reactive zone.
Right.
Right. Yes. So this is where we talked about this. I don't want to end up with my puppy not knowing the rules and not knowing that things like chewing the carpet is off limits. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have established commands yet. So for example, I know that there's somebody out there right now thinking, well, if they don't wander around and try that, how do they ever learn that chewing the carpet is off limits? And that is an extremely valid question. Mm-hmm. But by the time I allow them to wander around loose in the room and maybe investigate and try that thing, I have commands in place. I have a response to name in place. I have a leave it command, mm-hmm, that I've started. So yep, I can take that opportunity to, as my dog starts to sniff at that piece of the carpet, I can take that opportunity to call his name or, mm-hmm, say leave it. And I can help direct that behavior in, right, a much more productive way. Whereas if it was, you know, he's 8 weeks of age, mm-hmm, and doesn't know anything yet, and I'm not interacting with him and I'm just letting him wander around the room, and he goes over to sniff that carpet, what is my recourse there other than to be reactive in that moment? Mm-hmm. I mean, if he starts chewing on the carpet, I need to stop that.
Right, yeah.
I can't just let that thing happen, mm-hmm, because I don't want him learning to chew up my house. So now there's this like, okay, how do I affect change in this, mm-hmm, moment? Do I just distract him away from it, or do I, what are you doing? Right. Don't chew the, yes, carpet, which a lot of people will start the yelling thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you can't, you know, go and just pick your puppy up and move them away from that, mm-hmm, but it's also not a good training application in that moment. And they're not going to learn from that. So now I have this option in my mind where I need to either hold my puppy or they're going to go right back to that piece of carpet, or I need to put them away. So I just preempt that in the first, right, yes, few weeks that they're home with, mm-hmm, me, and I make sure that I don't end up in that scenario. So I, right, don't have to be reactive, yes, in my training.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
I was thinking too about our tone of voice and speaking to the puppy. I want my voice to mean something to my dog.
Yes.
So when I ask them to do something or ask them not to do something, I want my voice to be listened to and respected.
Yeah.
And I find often in class, people, instead of, just for an example, instead of telling their dog to sit, they'll say it like a question. Mm-hmm. Or they'll sing it.
Yeah.
They'll use a sing-song voice. And think of yourself, if someone asked you to do something in a very sing-songy, question-y way, and you're too busy doing something else, you'll probably get back to you
in a second.
But if someone comes up behind you in a business-like way and says, hey, sit, you're going to go, oh, okay, I will. That sounds like someone I have to listen to.
Yes.
But yeah, that pleading, sing-songy voice, yeah, that drives me insane. It's, yeah, like, you know, it's... Yeah, you're not asking the dog, you're telling the dog.
Yes, mm-hmm, absolutely. And then along those same lines, so I want to stay on this vein for a second, even though we were talking about snuggling, but I want to stay on this vein for a second because it's an important one, and, right, it's a counterintuitive one, because as humans, we think, oh, I need to be nicer to the dog or they won't like me. And nothing could be further from, right, the truth. Not that we don't want to be nice to our dogs. Of course we want to be nice to our, mm-hmm, dogs. But we don't want to be nice, quote unquote, by letting them off the hook when, right, they blow us off on commands that we've given, mm-hmm, them. So not following through is another point on my list here. And,
okay,
I
jumped off topic,
no,
didn't
absolutely,
I?
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm, yes, glad you did. It was a good segue.
Dogs love bossy people.
Yeah.
But we don't like bossy people. But dogs like people who are... that they look to as a boss. Yes. Just to put it very bluntly, like dogs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's a good way to put it, because bosses are not inconsequential. You,
right,
know, if you don't do what the boss asks you to do, there's going to be consequences,
right,
to that.
Right.
And it needs to be the same for our dogs. And, mm-hmm, we're not using harsh consequences,
no,
by any,
no,
stretch. But if I said to my dog, sit, and he didn't sit, and I simply asked him again, well, he's just going to keep standing there and staring,
right,
at,
yes,
me each time I ask him to sit. And it becomes a situation where he thinks, I can sit if I want to, but if I don't want to, I'm not going to follow through with that. So follow through from the humans, mm-hmm, is a crucial,
yes,
component. If,
yes,
I say to my dog, sit, and my dog just looks at me, even if they're adorable as anything, yeah. I am still going to follow through with that. I'm going to repeat sit, and I'm going to place my dog in the sit.
Right. So, it doesn't matter that a butterfly flew by, because exactly. Some people say, oh, well, he was going to sit, but then a butterfly flew by. No. I asked you to sit. I'm the boss. I'm a good and fair boss, and you are going to sit.
Exactly. And it doesn't need to be mean or nasty or overly harsh, but it needs to be consistent information. If I ask you for something, I expect you to do it. And it matters with the little things, you know. A lot of the times people say, it's not a big deal. He didn't say whatever. I had to give him two commands, whatever. You know what? It is a big deal because it sets the tone both for yourself and your expectations.
Right.
And for the dog and what they perceive as needing to listen.
Right.
So if you simply let them do their thing and you don't follow through and take action when you've asked them to do something, and even if it's a little thing, it translates over to the big things. Right. So if my dog thinks, you're inconsequential. I don't need to listen to that sit command. Maybe I don't need to listen to the come command. If I'm chasing a squirrel and that squirrel is really attractive and fun and I'm in prey drive mode, I don't need to listen to that recall cue because I didn't need to listen to that sit cue and I didn't need to listen to that stay cue. Pick skills that you can be consistent with and pick a consistent follow through for those skills and just make it happen.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be militant. It just has to be consistent and fair so that the dog clearly understands.
Yes. And don't give the command if you're not prepared to follow through.
Perfect.
I see
that's
that.
Great.
I see that at the vet clinic often. The people are trying to pay their bill and they're saying to the dog, sit, 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 while they're doing all that. And the dog's, you know, trying to play with my dog or leaping all around. And well, you should never have said that word because... And then don't be afraid. If you have said the word, don't be afraid to say to the receptionist, hold on.
Yes.
And place the dog in the sit.
Brilliant.
It's funny how we do that automatically. Like I can be talking to my neighbor and I never skip a beat. I'm like placing my dog while I talk to the neighbor. And that's good dog training.
Absolutely.
Don't be embarrassed to address your dog.
Yes, absolutely. And I guarantee you that if there's any of us hanging around watching when this happens, we'll be so proud of you for doing it.
Yes,
we might even come up when you're not distracted by your dog and give you a big high five
for
working it out and helping your dog be successful and helping them understand that when you ask them for something, they have to follow through. It really is.
Yeah, I know I've called out to people that I don't know. When I see them follow through, it's like, hey, good dog training.
Yeah.
Like I just call out because it's like, wow. Or I'll point out to whoever I'm with. Look at that person's a good dog trainer. Yes. Look what they just did.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do the same thing when I'm watching people. I don't generally call out because I'm a little bit too introverted for that. But when I'm watching people, I'm like, oh, look at them. They're actually following through.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so good.
Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Good. They're going to have a good trained dog.
And it's funny. Sometimes I'll notice our McCann leashes, I can spot them a mile away because they're very unique. And I say, oh, they got a McCann leash on. All right.
Yeah. Going to have to go find out whose class they
were in. Yes.
Compliment those instructors on a job well done and the person on a job well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so important. That follow through is huge. And if the follow through is there, the dog will learn to listen and tune in and pay attention and respect the commands that you have given them. If you don't follow through and they learn that they don't have to pay attention, then they learn not to respect those commands.
Yes.
And of course, that leads to them going, you're not valuable. You're not consequential. I don't need to pay attention to you.
Right.
I would much rather go and try to play with that dog down the street or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So. And they figure it out too. If you're on the phone and they're doing something and you're like just, you know, waving at them or snapping your fingers at them and you never leave the phone to go and fix it, they know. It's like, oh, they're on the phone. This is the time to go and get all the garbage out of the bathroom garbage because they're on the phone. That's what I do when they're on the phone.
Exactly. Take the moment to say, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to put you on hold for a second and go and deal with the dog. And maybe if it's going to be a long phone conversation, you can tuck them away in their crate so that they are not causing mischief while that happens. And it, as an aside, if these things happen where your dog figures out that, oh, you're on the phone and you're tied up and I can get away with mischief, it is so easy to pick up a phone and pretend to be talking so that the dog can start that behavior and you can say, ha, 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 no, I can catch you. And not even have to worry about a person on the other end of the line. So I just wanted to go back to the snuggling part for a second because I wanted to talk about listening to the dog in this moment. And I think it's so important that we look at what our dogs like.
Right.
And we respect what our dogs like. So for example, As Ned was growing up, it became very obvious very early on with me that he didn't like his head being touched. Mm-hmm. And I would go to pet his little cute little fuzzy head mm-hmm. because it was so adorable, of course, baby Neddy. And he would just, I mean, he would tolerate it because he's a sweet dog and he's well bred. He's got a solid temperament, mm-hmm. but his little ears would go back. And I could just see this little, you know, start of avoidance happening where he would kind of like try to duck away. He just didn't like it. He still doesn't love it. Mm-hmm. But at this point he's tuned in enough to me and to our relationship and to our partnership that he's like, yeah, I'll take it because I like being close to you. But I try my best still not to pet his head because I want to respect him as much as I expect him to respect me.
Right.
So I don't want to do things that he doesn't enjoy unless I have taken a ton of time to counter condition those things. So sometimes, you know, things like nail clipping. If my dog doesn't like nail clipping, well, you know, too bad, so sad. You have to have your nails trimmed. So I'm going to take a ton of time to teach my dog and condition my dog to be okay with nail clipping, that they're safe with nail clipping. I spend a ton of time building positive association for grooming stuff and for nail clipping especially. All my dogs actually come and line up when I'm ready for the the nail trim. When I bring out the Dremel now, I've recently gone to a Dremel, and when I bring out the Dremel now, they're all like, yep, here I am. Here I am. Trim my toenails. Because they learn that it's a positive thing. But with things like petting the head, you know what? He likes butt scratches. He loves being pet on the chest. He loves being pet on the side. I can just do that. And then I'm not risking putting this wedge in our relationship by forcing something that he actually finds aversive.
You know? I have a similar. I have a picture that was a professional portrait that was taken of Ty and Cowboy and Honda. And so, you know, you put them up on a podium. So Ty's sitting there in his Sunday best. And then I have Cowboy and Honda. And I put Cowboy beside Ty because she was the tall one. And then, so she's in the middle and then Honda on the other side. And you can see in the picture that Cowboy does not want to be super close to Ty.
Okay.
And she's kind of viewed her body. So she's left her butt because she knows she's on a sit stay. So her butt cannot move and her front paws cannot move. But you can see that she's contorted her body a little bit because Ty is in her bubble.
Okay.
And she's kind of like, he's a little bit too close for comfort. Cowboy was not a snuggly dog. That's one thing. She did not enjoy snuggles. She really didn't enjoy being patted that much either.
Okay.
She was a sight hound and a little bit quirky. And in that picture, I can very much see that she's behaving, but she's saying, Ty's a little bit too close to me, and I love Ty and I adore him, but it's uncomfortable to me. I'm not a snuggly dog. And you can see the little you in her body. Yeah. Every time I see that picture, that's all I see. And I think, I should have put Honda in between because Honda would have sat up right against Ty because he loves to be snuggled and loves to be tight. But Cowboy's, you know, raised very similar, but just a different breed of dog.
Absolutely. Well, and they're all different. They all have different personalities. And I've never had a dog that was like, oh, I don't really want you to touch my head, that I thought that I felt that same thing from all the other tollers. Like I would take their ears and quince. See my Rottweiler, I'd take their ears and scrunch their ears up and like, you know, just general affection around their face and they were right into it. Yep. But Ned, for whatever reason, he always like, found it to be something he didn't like. So we need to listen to those things, you know, whether it's snuggling, petting, whatever it is that the dog doesn't like, within reason, of course. And there are some things that, of course, the dog's not going to like getting a thermometer in their rear when they go to the vet. They're not going to like getting vaccination pokes. They're not going to like those things. They have to tolerate those things. So we work through those things. But when it's something that's not a necessity, I'm going to listen to my dog. And if my dog, another one that I would talk about, there's, we just did, a monthly members only coaching call, live coaching call with our online students about building Toy Drive. And instructor Robbie and myself do the monthly members only coaching calls and support our monthly members, which is sort of a higher learning group in our online training group. And we talked about Tug Drive, and there was such clear definition and difference between what Robbie's dogs like and what my dogs like when it comes to tugging. So for example, Robbie's dogs love it when she grabs the sides of their face and smacks them on the sides as they're tugging, and you know, they get right into it and they feel powerful from that, and that's wonderful.
Right.
With Ned, when I smack him on the side, he goes, "Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing?" And he's always been like
that. Yes.
But on the scale of that, I will, as I'm tugging, show him my hand as if I'm about to smack him on the side, and then I just slowly tease him with it, and he loves that. He gets all into the game, and he gets powerful from that, and he looks sideways at my hand, and he tries to escape it while he's still playing tug and being tough. And so these differences, they're massive for the dog. You know, his enjoyment of tug would go down if I insisted on smacking him on the side because I enjoyed it for some reason. So I want to listen to my dog, and that is going to help build the relationship as well. If Ned knows that getting involved in a game of tug with me is enjoyable on every level versus getting involved in a game of tug with me is going to create this uncomfortable scenario for him, that's going to help build our, build and drive our bond as well. Right, so listen to your dogs. Alrighty, this next one. We did a video recently with, we polled all of our instructors on a bunch of different questions. And this one question was, what is the biggest mistake new puppy owners make? And do you remember this video I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Do you remember the answer?
Is it too much freedom?
Too much freedom. Too much freedom. Absolutely. And this is another counterintuitive one because people often think that, oh, if my puppy doesn't like me, then putting them in the crate or taking away their freedom or whatever is going to make that even more obvious that they don't like me. And, and that's actually the reverse.
Right, it's the opposite.
So when it comes to, we talk about leadership and we talk about controlling resources as being part of leadership. And when we don't control those resources, and some of the time that includes things like, a lot of the time that includes things like freedom, and instinctually people want to just offer their puppies all this freedom and that leaves the puppy fulfilling their own
rights. Yes.
So because we want to establish leadership and use those resources to our advantage, we need to use them to our advantage. And freedom is a huge one. Freedom is massive. And if our dogs have too much freedom, it means that they self-reward, they self-govern, they don't look to us for guidance, they don't look to us for advice, and they end up in a situation where all of their needs get met by their own scavenging and by exploring and all of these things that they do.
And we're just an interruption in their
life. Exactly. The thing that brings that all together is those things don't involve us.
Right.
So I often talk about, I have a document about enrichment. I'm going to make a note here to add it to the show notes so we can help clarify some enrichment things for people.
Going along with that too is taking your dog to dog parks and daycare.
Yeah.
Well, if your dog plays all day with another dog, his needs have been met, and now you're inconsequential when he comes home.
Exactly.
It's like, you know what? I don't need you. I get my fun elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're getting all of their emotional and physical needs met by other dogs at daycare or other dogs at the dog park or other dogs in your home even. You know, we often get repeat clients who have trained another dog with us a few years ago and now they've got a puppy coming in, or we get people who get dogs a little bit closer together. We always recommend that each puppy is raised as an individual. And if they do have time with the other dogs in the home, it's very short.
Right.
And it is not the mainstay of their life.
Right.
And that is going to put you in a better light because you're going to provide them with all of the needs, the play needs, the food needs, the emotional needs. All of those things are going to be provided by you rather than being provided by the other dogs in the home. And I know that there's people out there thinking, but I wanted my dog to have another buddy, or I wanted them to be best buddies. And they will be.
They really will be. Yep.
You know,
yep.
They'll be best buddies, but to the point where they're not obsessed with each other.
Yes. I remember when I had my two corgis and my Malinois, they always were together, but they seldom played.
Yes.
But if I said to them, go play, like get each other, then they would start to interact with each other and play. But they always were waiting for me first. It's like, well, our first choice is to do something with you.
Yes.
And I would say, come on, you guys, we're in the yard. Go play. Yeah. And, you know, and they might chase each other or do a bit of wrestling, but no, they liked hanging out with.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, with me.
And a lot of the times the big mistake that people make is letting the puppy spend all their time with the older dog.
Right.
A lot of the times
harassing the older dog too.
Yeah. A lot of the times the older dog gets put off. So some older dogs are really good about telling a puppy off in a nice way and, you know, putting them in their place. And some of the older dogs will try to tread lightly. You know, they've already established that they are, you know, a subordinate in this relationship with you. So they're waiting for you to step in and deal with the puppy. And a lot of the times people do things like, oh, be nice to the puppy. Be nice to the puppy. Be nice to the puppy. And then the older dog goes, okay, I'm trying until they lose their patience entirely.
Right.
And then the tell-off might not be a nice tell-off.
Right, so, yes. And then people blame the older dog. And this poor older dog was just, it was getting nagged and nagged and nagged by the puppy. And you did nothing as the leader.
Yeah,
you stood by and watched it. You let your dog down.
Yeah, I always say advocate for the older dog because they didn't ask for the puppy. And I guarantee you that unless they are that, you know, wild and crazy wrestle, crash, bang dog that's like, oh yeah, I'm into this. This is great.
Right.
They're probably a little bit uncertain about those puppy teeth, especially because they hurt.
Right, yes.
You know, just like puppies bite us when they're in the nipping stage of life. And we need to tell our puppies that that's not acceptable.
Right, yes.
Our older dogs are also experiencing that same thing. They're probably feeling those needles and it probably hurts. And we need to protect them from that because they didn't ask for another puppy. And creating that resentment in the early stages of the puppy being home will stay with that older dog for a long, long time, if not forever.
Yes.
So you're so much better off to have, we actually have, did we do a podcast episode on when one is not enough, or is that just an article I've written?
I think it's just an article.
Okay, well, we should do a podcast episode on multiple dogs, because that is a really good topic.
Yes.
I can make a note here.
Yeah. Well, and think of yourself. You're an adult, and you have, say, a five-year-old child. You don't want your five-year-old child crawling over you all day.
Yes, good point.
Yeah, like you say to the child, okay, that's enough. You know,
and
what
if it was someone else's five-year-old child?
Oh, yeah. Like if suddenly your neighbor comes over with their five-year-old and you're trying to sit and relax and 8 hours of them yelling and biting your arm, like that's how your older dog feels. So put yourself in your dog's shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoes, multiple shoes.
Not one shoe.
Four shoes.
Yes.
Excellent.
No, we're not saying dogs need shoes, though. That's another podcast. Do dogs need shoes?
Do dogs need shoes? I haven't used a lot of shoes with my dogs.
No, I don't think my dogs have ever. Atari had a shoe because she had that an injury and she dragged a leg. So the shoe protected her toes.
There you go. But sometimes they come in handy.
Yes.
Well, that's why you said shoe singular, because she only had
one.
Right,
that's true.
Makes
her
sense.
Shoe. That's right. Yeah, Atari always, okay, Atari, let's put on your shoe every time we went for a walk so she wouldn't.
There's
her foot wouldn't get abraded.
Yeah. Alrighty. So a lot of these things are solved by good training. I mean, truly, training builds relationship and bond. It's actually quite amazing, the relationship that you can build with your dogs by being able to communicate with them, by your dog being able to tell you what they need and what they want, and by you being able to listen.
Right.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
It creates a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It really takes the whole dog ownership thing to a completely different level. And it makes it an amazing, an amazing relationship.
Yes. So I feel bad for the dogs that, because the dogs had no training and the people blame the dog, it ends up being regulated or relegated to the backyard.
Yeah.
And it's not the dog's fault.
Fact.
And people often do, well, he can't come in the house because he's too hyper. He can't come in the house because he chews. Well, that you should be out in the yard then, because you neglected training your dog. And I feel bad for those dogs.
Oh, my goodness. I can just see everybody tonight. The people are out in the yard. The dog's in the house going, ha-ha, at the window.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
I do have a couple of other things on my list here that are a little bit more obscure. And one of them is more about the dog's breeding than anything. So talk about domesticated dogs for a minute. Like, what does the domestication process do to the dog's brain?
Well, it makes...
And what is it? Sorry.
Well, domestication is having the dogs lose, like, feral instincts, so wild instincts, and being dependent more on a person and wanting to listen and please us.
Yeah.
So we, throughout the years, we have bred dogs that listen well, that show good traits, that make them fit easily into our human lives.
Yes.
You know, we don't intentionally breed dogs that, that attack humans. We don't intentionally breed dogs that
are overly shy.
Right, overly shy, yes. Yeah. So we want dogs that have been bred to fit well into our lives.
Exactly.
And there's some breeds that are still very primitive.
Yes.
A lot of the rare breeds are very primitive, and these things haven't been bred into them.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't make quite as easy, like they can make good pets, but they require a bit more work.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about, too, what they were bred to do. Mm-hmm. So as you're saying, if you're getting a flock guardian dog, you know, say you love the Kuvos.
Yeah.
Well, these dogs are generally bred to hang out with the livestock and make this very tight bond with the livestock. They're not necessarily bred to be super friendly with humans. And that's part of what they need to be to do their job well.
Yes. So consider some of the breeds that are very primitive herding breeds. Mm-hmm. They're bred to be super aware of their environment.
Right.
Putting them in downtown Toronto is overwhelming to their senses. There's just too much. They want to control the environment. Herding breeds want to control the environment. They cannot control a busy downtown, and it can make them very neurotic.
Yes, absolutely. And then if some of these other things are in play as well, and they don't see good leadership qualities in you because you're approaching things in a way that is more human quality than dog quality, that also makes things really hard. And then you are the one putting them in these dangerous situations versus you being the one protecting them in these situations. Mm-hmm. So that is a really valid thing. I also want to talk about what their history is. So sometimes we have rescue dogs that we bring into our home. And in this scenario, this is where it is so important. You need to put the dog's emotional needs above your own needs. So the dog that comes in who has, you know, been in a kennel for X amount of months, or who has been in a rescue situation, or who just came off the street, or there's so many scenarios these days. That dog needs time to decompress. He needs time to realize that you're trustworthy, and he needs time with structure and good leadership and good consistent quality information. That is not the dog that needs the, you know, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for this dog that I'm going to snuggle and cry over him every night. That is going to be so foreign to a dog who has maybe a history of distrust with people. You need to use an extreme amount of patience in that scenario, and you need to help that dog be successful in a way that makes sense to the dog.
Yes.
We actually did a podcast episode on rescue dogs with instructor Carol, who has had many of them and has things down to a fine science as much as you possibly can when there's the unpredictability factors.
Right.
But one other thought that I had with rescue dogs as well, is that we are bringing in a lot of dogs from other places where their lives are more street dog related.
Right, yep.
You know, they're street dogs and meat dogs and dogs that have not necessarily been bred for generations for domestication.
Right.
And some of those dogs, they're you're never going to be able to have the same bond with that dog as you would with a, you know, the good old golden retriever that's been bred for however many hundreds of years. I have no idea how old the breed is now that I just said that. But, you know, that dog has generationally been bred to, so the friendlier dog gets bred to the friendlier dog to the friendlier dog. And they're just lovely dogs that, you know, instantly love everybody pretty much in most cases when you have your typical golden retriever or Labrador retriever.
Right.
Whereas your street dogs have been bred.
Well, I have an interesting story. Just a couple of weeks ago, I went to a barbecue with people I didn't know, and they were having, it was a 50th birthday party, and there was a lot of people. And I was told before
youngins.
I was told before that they have three pot cakes that their vacation is to go to the Bahamas, and they go to like a pot cake camp or kennel, and your intention to go down there is to go down and bring back a dog.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, well, this will be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I got there, and I felt bad for these three dogs. So there's about 30 people there. The dogs were not crated. They were not put away. They were left in the fray of people, and these dogs did not want to be touched.
Oh.
These dogs were backing away, tails tucked between their legs, and they were being forced to be in the yard at this party, and they were terrified. And I felt truly bad. I thought, these dogs don't have the genetic background to be with all these people. These dogs have been, you know, bred from very wary dogs that stay away from people. They finally put one away, and I had to go to the washroom at one point, and it was in the living room, and I walked past the living room, and that dog was spook barking at me, and there was no barrier between me and that dog. And I thought, you know, if I walked in to try to soothe the dog, I could get bit.
Yeah, and a lot of people's instinct would be to, okay, I'm your friend.
Right, and I didn't feel like, I just met these people, and I didn't feel it was my place to
offer advice,
and I didn't say anything about my dog training background, but I thought, these people, they've done the dog a great service by giving them a good home, but right now they're doing the dogs a great service, and they're not, they're not listening. Yeah. These are not party dogs.
Yeah.
These are dogs that are terrified of the situation they're in, and you're not reading it.
Yeah, this is where reading the dog and listening to the dog and putting the dog's emotional needs above your own.
Right. Like,
there needs to be a plan in place for those dogs for when anybody comes into the house. Yes. And they, you know, there's always hope. Mm-hmm. There's always hope to build their confidence, but that's not the
way
to do it.
That was not the way to do it,
no. This is flooding. This is like putting the person who is terrified of spiders in a room full of spiders and letting the spiders crawl all over them in hopes that the person realizes that, oh, nothing bad is happening to me. I'm still alive. So spiders must be great. Ooh, I love spiders. Mm-hmm. This is not the approach that we ever want to take in our dog training.
No.
Or we want to take a very quiet, slow, systematic approach. Slow is fast when it comes to helping them with anything that might be fearful at all.
Like, I've been on roller coasters a few times, but I keep wanting to enjoy them, but I really don't enjoy them. And I find when I'm on there, I'm not getting used to it. It's still frightening. Yeah. So your dog feels the same way. Yeah. Like, because a crowd of people is ever changing.
Yes.
And just because, like, my Sheltie Atari was nervous, and she would get, okay, I know this group of people, Christine's friends, they're over, I get to know them, and now I feel good. But if suddenly I changed up the group on her, she'd be like, yikes, who are these new people? So
Well, and imagine if every single one of those people wanted to be in her space. So imagine if your approach to liking roller coasters or trying to like roller coasters was just to keep going from one roller coaster to the next to the next to the next. I mean, chances are it's not going to get any funner if it's frightening for you or if it doesn't make you feel good.
Right.
So we want to help our dogs if the possibility is there. But you might always have to consider that if you are entering into that sort of a relationship with a dog that has been bred for, not bred for domestication, it's entirely possible that you're going to end up with a relationship that is just different than what you were dreaming of and hoping for. And I always say you need to train and work with the dog that you have, not the dog you wish you had. Mm-hmm. So it's just something to definitely consider based on where and how you are acquiring your dog. So it's a wonderful thing to give them homes, but you might need to adjust your expectation a little bit if you're bringing them into your home and expecting to have that golden retriever type personality. It might not work out that way if you've gotten a cake off the street.
Thinking that way too, if you are getting the dog to help you with your emotional support, you want a steady, dog.
Absolutely.
So, like if you get a dog that, you know, has a suspect background or you're not sure, then you need to be more emotionally supportive of that dog.
Yes, absolutely.
I remember one lady calling and she was getting a rescue dog from Texas she had never met and she wanted it to be her emotional support dog. I remember thinking like,
it's risky.
It's risky. We don't know what this dog's going to be like. Yes. Like, it may need the support. Yeah. So, yes.
And it's crucial that you put the dog's emotional needs above your own.
Yes.
I say that all the time and I can't say it enough. Mm-hmm. You know, those emotional needs are very delicate and we need to make sure that we give them the respect that they need.
Right.
And we treat the dog as a dog and look at them from that perspective, because if we try to put our human emotions all over them, a lot of the times that is going to drive the big wedge in our relationship.
Yes.
Well, I hope that this episode has been fun and informative for everybody out there. And I'm going to drop a link in the description, the show notes below on our YouTube podcast channel to that enrichment document that I talked about, where I split enrichment activities into a column A, which are good enrichment activities to partake in a lot that include us, that help to build our value. Mm-hmm. And then there's enrichment activities from column B that do the opposite of that. They only serve the dog and they leave us out of the picture and they end up actually driving a wedge in our relationship. So we'll include those in the show notes below. And on that note, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. we help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at mccanndogs.com. Happy training!